This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 in the evening, and we have a full studio this 6 o'clock hour because we are returning. Well, we have Lean in Malaysia actually returning to talk about the cause of women returning to the workforce, and also to discuss women in senior management positions. And that conversation kind of happened in July this year. But today we wanted to talk about, in many ways, the other half of that equation, which are, of course, men, as well as the notion of the male champion. We're talking about this partly because there is never a bad time to talk about this, and partly because there is a Lean In Unconference happening next Saturday with the theme Experiencing Breakthrough, Hear It, See It, Be It. We're going to give you more details on that in just a bit. My guests this hour are, of course, His Excellency Andrew Golodzinovsky, who is the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia. We also have Deborah Nita Ravindran, Head of the Lean In Career Program, and Asma Shahira, Head of the Lean In Unconference. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's start with this, right? Lean in Malaysia was last year in July to discuss mothers returning to the workplace, the Lean in Career Program 4.0. Deborah, you were here for that. How did that go?
It went well. So it ended just a month ago and there were 19 mentees on the program. You know, for me personally, to see the transformation of the women from week one to week nine was just astounding. The way they held themselves on stage was great. In terms of, you know, real results, half of them, because the aim was for them to return to the workforce, get work experience, so half of them have either returned to work, got job offers or short-term contracts, and another 22% have received work experience. So we've seen a lot of progress just over a month, and we're really looking forward to see what else they get up to. Yeah.
And when you were here, we actually kind of covered a number of the issues that we see women facing, but in actually speaking to the 19 mentees and, you know, having this program, hearing from them, were there any new challenges that ended up kind of surfacing through that program?
I think the challenge that became very obvious when we had one of the things, which is networking sessions, was we realized how when taking a career break, they were so cut off from their professional networks because the main person who they were talking to, most of them had children and took career breaks because of it. So they weren't able to meet professionally anymore, and just giving them that access, just organizing events, tying up with companies and providing them that platform made such a huge difference. The way they talked, the things they talked about. So those are the challenges that we noticed when the actual program started.
And right now then, are most of the people who are interested in Lean In actually women? And I'm asking because we're just about to kind of talk about the importance of having kind of an inclusive approach on this. I mean, have you seen significant interest from men in the workforce?
So we have different categories of men being involved. Of course, the majority are women, but we're so excited that many of our speakers, mentors, yes, 30 to 50% are men, and they love being part of this. They love contributing to the conversation and to the action. 20 to 40% of those attending our masterclasses are men. So it's actually quite promising. So when they see topics that are interesting for them, they're like, okay, hey, this is going to be relevant and beneficial to me. I'd like to get involved. Because, you know, negotiation, for example, is not only something that women want to learn about, men also want to learn about that.
We're talking today about trying to create really a strong sense of inclusivity in the workplace, of getting that kind of equal participation. I'd like to hear about your workplaces. I mean, is it something that, is it a place that you think of as having those sorts of principles, as having the principles of inclusivity, of gender equality? What do you think needs to happen if it isn't already that space to make it that space? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So, you know, one of the themes that has emerged when we're talking about the upcoming Lean In Unconference is the idea of male participation or the male champion. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, for one of the topics that we would like to emphasize more for this coming upcoming Lean In Conference, which is one of the main objectives for Lean In Conference, to bring more men allies to be a part of the conversation. So hence the reason why we bring in this segment, be it be the male champion. So how, first of all, we have to define the idea of male champion is someone who is unconventional in thinking, understand and appreciate the importance of women empowerment and gender equality as a whole. So this idea, these men are strongly advocate and always be a part of women empowerment agenda, and they always be a part of the conversation. That's the most important thing. And the objective of the idea of championing the idea of male champion, one of it is to create more awareness among men and how else they can get involved since they can represent half of the population. Yeah, so I guess that's the reason why here today we have one of our male ally, His Excellency Andrew from Australia High Commission. Thank you so much. And to be honest, this year, Australia High Commission has been, this is the second time they support us for the same event, Linan Conference. So that's the reason why we invite him to be a part of this conversation. And why, maybe you can ask him as well, why are you a part of the male champion? Are you a male champion? And how do you define male champion as well?
Well, thank you, Shahira. And thank you very much for having me back on. Yes, I think of myself as a male champion for change. It's a very big movement in Australia now. It started in 2010 and it's really taken off. Yeah. And the theory behind it is that gender equity and women's empowerment are not women's issues per se. They are economic and social issues that all people need to be involved in.
And on your part then, Andrew, how did you start thinking about that? Because I do think that there is a sense of, for most of us in the workplace, at least at the beginning especially, I think we're very invested in ourselves, right? We're thinking about how we can get ahead. We're thinking about how we can kind of move through, be successful. We don't always think of others. And I don't just mean that in terms of gender. Just in general, we don't always think of others. So how did you go, I'm speaking for your personal working life now, but how did you go perhaps from that kind of career thinking to, you know, thinking about equity?
Well, for me, it was made very easy. There's been a huge cultural change in the Australian public service over a period of time, and particularly in the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. I'll give you some examples. When I report back to Canberra, the person I report back to is the person who looks after Southeast Asia. She's a woman. The secretary of our department, Frances Adamson, is a woman. Our foreign minister is a woman. So, and it's a second foreign minister in a row who's a woman. So not surprisingly, the culture of the organisation has reflected this reality. So I was just saying earlier this evening as we were waiting to come on, in my department, there's a positive program to ensure that women are able to fulfill their potential. And as a consequence, now 40% of all our ambassadors overseas are women. And I would expect the number to reach 50 very shortly.
So in an office setting or just in any workplace setting, then, how important is it to have both men and women involved in championing this issue of equality? Because as you mentioned earlier, it's not necessarily just, or it shouldn't only be seen as a woman's issue.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. If it's just women talking about it, then equity becomes something which they ask for and which men can grant them. But in fact, that's actually not the case at all. Everybody needs to be in the conversation because it involves everybody. Again, we were saying earlier that it's, of course, women's issues are human rights issues. But it's more than that. It's also about doing the smart thing for your organisation.
Yes.
So I was saying that in Australia, we haven't closed the gap. The difference between male and female participation is 10 percentage points. But that's actually better than some countries. And as a consequence, our economy grows as a result of that. And the outcomes that we achieve are better for everybody, men and women.
We're talking today about trying to get that idea of workplace equality across, right? And also not just involving women, but actually having men participate in this conversation. I'd like to hear from you. I mean, is gender equality something that you see in your workplace? Is it something that you think is important to the organization that you work for? Call us and let us know. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9. 89.9.
It is 6:17 and you're listening to Lynn on the Evening Edition. And we have just a full house of guests with us today. We have three. First up, we have two representatives from Lean in Malaysia, Deborah Nita Ravindran, as well as Asma Shahira, and also His Excellency Andrew Galitzanowski, who is the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia. And we're talking about gender equality in the workplace and the importance of involving everybody in that conversation, of having a male champion, so to speak. Not just, I suppose, you know, women kind of trying to make it happen on their own. If you have thoughts on this, if you have questions, if you'd like to share your experiences of gender equality in the workplace or lack thereof, also fine. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, something that I did want to talk about, because I think it's something I've observed in just working, in being somebody in the workplace, is that sometimes struggles can be difficult to see, right? Especially when they're based on unconscious bias, especially when, or they're based on long-running workplace conventions, just the idea of how a workplace should be. How can both genders be made perhaps more aware of the different workplace environments that you face?
So just from a Lean in Malaysia perspective, so what we feel is that if things are invisible, but we need them to be heard, then there should be a dialogue that's created. And the way that we found it to be quite effective for dialogue is to create a circle. So circles are just spaces where people can talk about certain things. So we've actually partnered with different companies to form circles. In one of the recent companies, they actually formed more than 30 circles, and many of the leads of the circles were male. So it was very exciting for them, and it was a female-focused circle. So it's very exciting to see that people are willing to have this conversation, because if you don't have dialogue, then the things can't come out to the surface, and yes, then you can't get to solutions. And we want solutions from both women and men.
Yes. And actually, I would like to know, you know, Deborah, Shahira, are you both people who you think work in workplaces that have gender equality? Because Andrew kind of shared his experiences, but on your parts, you know, what are your workplaces like?
Technically, in my industry, most of them are male-dominated industry, especially in the top management. But the thing is, we have moved forward more than last time. Right now, as you can see, more and more top management are more female and more diverse compared to last time. I think that is more because of the, we have a more dialogue session and everybody aware of what's going on. Everybody knows for a fact if having diverse team is so much better than the, for not having, for having male dominated industry. So yes, it is happening, you know. It's just that the reason why we managed to tackle all the issue, because we managed to address it and we managed to come up with a solution. That's about it.
I would say from my side, I work in broadcast media, so it is very, very balanced. I have a lot of, you know, female role models who are in the senior leadership team. So for me, I feel like it's a very equal playing field. As long as the women show initiative and they ask for things and they want to rise, there's definitely a room for them to rise. But of course, from, you know, seeing other women join Lean in Malaysia and hear their experiences, it's not always the case in all industries. And that's what we still have to work on right now.
Andrew, you mentioned something about training earlier, something that is an important part of your work. Could you talk to us about that?
Yes. I think if an organisation really wants to implement change, strategies are very important. You have to formalise your goals and then develop ways to achieve them. So in our case, and I was saying during the break, we have compulsory training in unconscious bias. Every single person in our organisation has to undertake it. So I couldn't come to Malaysia before I undertook that training. And it's not just bias in terms of gender, but also in terms of race, religion, disability, things which maybe we aren't, you know, by definition, we're not aware of our biases until we have the opportunity to reflect on that. Similarly, we have formal goals in terms of achieving parity in promotion rounds, particularly at the senior executive levels. We also have dialogues. This morning, for example, I called together all the staff in the Australian High Commission and we talked about our strategies for countering domestic violence, violence against women, because, as you know, on Monday it will be the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and it's something that we formally acknowledge. You would have seen my tweet about it earlier today. So it's not just about good intentions. You have to actually make sure that your actions match what you say.
So I guess just I have a question, Andrew. So for us here in Malaysia, I mean, unconscious bias training is something that's quite a new concept. So what kind of themes or content is covered inside? I mean, give us some insight on then how it could actually impact the conversation and our perceptions.
Hmm. Well, the assumption is you're dealing with people who want to do well. So you don't have to hit them over the head with a piece of wood. It's a case of engaging in a dialogue and an awareness-raising exercise. So in the case of the course that I undertook, we were given real-life examples of how unconscious bias can operate. We were given statistics which showed how it operates. And there are some role plays that you can do as well, which are very interesting, where people are talking to somebody who they don't see. And it's only at the end of the conversation do you get to actually see the person that you're speaking with, and you realize that your impression is completely different from the reality. Mm. So there are sophisticated ways in which this can be done, which doesn't offend people, doesn't challenge people in ways which is counterproductive.
So challenge is an interesting word, and that's the one that I want to kind of pick up on, because I think more often than not, when you tell a group of people, say in an organization that has been running along perfectly fine, or so they think, without training for many years, and you suddenly come in and go, no, you know what? We need training. We need to kind of put in these workshops, these protocols. Sometimes the reaction is one of challenge, right? It's like, well, what are you accusing me of? What did I do? Is that something that you saw happen? I mean, is that something that you think people kind of need to work through?
Yes, to a degree. I mean, humans are... We do tend to get a little bit sort of protective
defensive.
Of ourselves, defensive, yeah. But you know, as an organization begins to grapple with these things, the culture starts to change and the dialogue changes. And as I think we've heard from others, cultural change comes from the top. So if you have male champions of change who are out there saying, actually, this is the normal way of doing business, then others start to understand, okay, there's no reason for me to feel defensive.
Actually, just adding on to that, Lean In Singapore that runs circles, so they have a circle that's just focused on male, and the co-founder, who's a female, when she co-facilitated one of the sessions with the male, and it's all males in the attendance, she found that the way they paid attention and the way they resonated was totally different than when she did it. And I guess that's because you're hearing about this from someone who's a bit more like you, who's facing challenges like you. So when I guess that's why male champions are so important. It's because you hear it for someone who you can identify with.
We have a message from Jane who says, and this is particularly, I think, for Andrew, who says, looking forward to salary fairness. Australian women earn an average of $23,000 less. Is that something that you think is going to, is that a conversation that's happening, really?
Yes, it's a conversation that's definitely happening. But Jane's right. We're not there yet. I mean, just to be clear on what Jane is talking about, I think it's not so much that women in exactly the same job in the same workplace earn differently. It's that women have different opportunities to get those jobs.
Yes. Yep.
And those jobs which are traditionally more feminine are rewarded differently from those that are more masculine.
Mm.
And that's something that, okay, we're conscious of. We haven't resolved it yet.
We also have a message from OSK for Lean In saying, I'm a champion for inclusivity and diversity in the workplace, and I do that by pushing opportunities for women, minorities, young people, differently abled people. In conversations with lead women and Lean In, the concept of inclusivity seems only to focus on women, which is why the CEO of Lead Women is a Dutch lady, Dr. Marcella Lucas, and not a local Malaysian, since she told me it's more about women, not about minorities, local leadership. So for Lean In Malaysia, then, how important is inclusivity to you besides just inclusivity for women?
I guess the reason why Lean In started was to champion women's issues.
Yes.
And we feel like there's still so much for us to address and tackle and improve on. And we found that, you know, being a bit more focused on topics definitely makes a difference. But we do see the parallels across the different kind of minority groups. And when it's relevant, we would love to be inclusive of the conversations that they're having. And so we can support in other ways, like attending their events, you know, sending speakers to those things. But in terms of like our main focus and where resources and the human resources are going to go into, it's still largely, I mean, being 5 years old, going to be focused on women.
We are speaking today with Deborah Nita Ravindran, who's the head of the Lean In Career Program, and Asma Shahira, head of the Lean In Unconference. And joining us today as a male representative, an important component of this conversation, is the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia, Andrew Galitzinowski. We are going to be continuing this conversation after the 6:30 news. We want to hear from you. I mean, do you think that you work in a workplace that has gender equality? If not, what's it going to take to get there? If you have any questions, send them our way. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:36. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, as well as two representatives of Lean In Malaysia, Deborah Nita Ravindran and Asma Shahira, as well as the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia, His Excellency Andrew Galitzinowski. And we are talking today about the importance of male voices as well when it comes to talking about equality in the workplace. And this is coming, I think, after we've had lots of conversations really about the challenges that women can face, especially when it comes to returning to the workplace or being in positions of decision making. But we just wanted to also hear about the male perspective on that. If you have thoughts or questions, you can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. So we have a couple of questions from listeners, but before we get to that, we've been talking about this notion of a balanced workplace without actually addressing directly what are the benefits, like what's in it for everyone, right? Can you talk about this perhaps from the point of view of different levels within an organisation?
Yes, there are a lot of research saying that the diverse workforce at all levels perform so much better and more effective. So one of the examples is that findings from Harvard Kennedy School, the impact of gender diversity on the performance of business teams. One of the findings is teams with equal gender mix perform so much better than male-dominated teams in sales and profit. So as you can see over here, a lot of research has been done. And this is not only because of people are saying we should have a diverse team, we should have diverse work, balanced workplace, workforce in the workplace. But now there are a lot of research saying that it is significant for people to have diverse team in the workplace because it contributes back to the profit and sales at the end of the day. It is a smart business decision to do.
Yeah, so it's not just merely a kind of moral argument as we were talking about just now. It's an economic argument. What's good for business? What's good for the country? What's good for the society? And as we see more data coming out, I guess it closes any other, like, you know, people who refute it because we show that actually it's an effective strategy.
So we have some questions from listeners that are really circling around the idea of discrimination and fairness, particularly from the male perspective. So first, SW says, I work in Australia and many companies say that they welcome people of diverse backgrounds, gender, race, colour, etc. But when there's a specific recruitment program for women, isn't that discrimination against men, considering that the general recruitment process is already by merit?
I personally don't buy that. Women would tell us men that they've been discriminated against for thousands of years. If in the process of transitioning to a new cultural paradigm, we have to undertake targeted rounds, then I think that's something which is probably necessary to change culture. But by and large, I think there are more sophisticated ways to get to the same place. You need to have a strategy and you need to measure your outcomes. And if you see your outcomes are not meeting your goals, then you have to figure out where the problem lies. The problem in this gentleman's workplace might be that recruitment panels or promotion panels are not sufficiently mixed, or maybe they themselves are not sufficiently attuned to the importance of cultural change. But in our case, for example, we were finding, even though in foreign affairs we were encouraging women to apply for senior positions and we thought we were making it fair and reasonable and equitable for them to actually undertake those promotion processes, the numbers were still falling short. And what we realised was that in many cases, women, because of other responsibilities, family responsibilities, were finding it difficult to commit to these competitive promotion rounds and getting these more demanding jobs. And so the new policy we have is to actively encourage people to have flexible workplaces, to work from home, for example. In fact, the slogan we've now adopted in foreign affairs is, if not, why not? So managers like myself are told, if somebody asks you for flexibility in their work circumstances, your answer should be yes, unless there's a reason to say no. And that forces us all to start to think a little bit more creatively about how to solve these problems.
I want to address this idea of a cultural shift, partly because this is not the first time. So that message came from SW, and this is not the first time that sentiment like this has been expressed. You know, whenever we talk about fairness or equality, especially when it comes to this idea of genders, right? And I think that I can see where that's coming from in terms of a resentment. I think resentment happens anytime there is perceived special treatment, you know, and you don't always kind of think about why that special treatment might have come into being. You're just like, well, why not me? And that's an understandable thing. So how do you guys think organizations can kind of make that shift in order to communicate more effectively to everybody why it is that this is something that needs to be done, why it is that perhaps it's not as unfair as it seems?
I guess giving my experience from working with the women on the Lenient Career Program, I think there are, especially in the case of mothers, mothers are uniquely in a situation that well, majority of men can never be in, which is they generally hold more responsibilities of taking care of the infant, of the children. And so I guess they are technically in an unequal playing field. And so that's why maybe more unique strategies could be used to help them even with their aspirations, their professional aspirations. And as Andrew said, flexible work arrangements is really a great option. In fact, a lot of the applications from our program, they were asking like, do you think the companies that you're partnered with would be open to flexible work arrangements? Because I still do want to take care of my children and because it's still my responsibility mainly. And so I believe, so I understand the resentment and the pushback, of course. I guess maybe if those on the other perspective would be willing to hear us out and see that, you know, if there is a specific kind of situation that women face, especially as mothers, then would we be willing to make some, you know, unique as well accommodations for their situation. Of course, it must tie, they must deliver on their jobs. Like that's no doubt. Like I believe that if you're paid to do something, you need to do it as you're paid for it. So a lot of women actually, I've heard of personal stories. In fact, one of my colleagues who sits down in my office, she goes back exactly on time, 6, takes care of a child, and she starts working again late at night. And so she's actually doing her jobs, her job properly, completing her workload, and she's negotiated with her boss to create that kind of arrangement, and it works. So why not consider alternate ways of working?
If not, then why not, right? That's what we come back to. Kamaranism is saying equality or fairness. I don't believe equality can breed fairness in diversity because diversity will not be equal. Men and women have different needs and, you know, there are other differences such as race, religion. So let's be fair to all. Emphasizing too much on women has caused the development of male youth to become skewed. So be fair. How would you respond? I'll let anybody want, you know, take this one. Andrew looks ponderous.
Well, maybe I can just kind of like address the technical word that the listener is talking about, which is equality. So there's a difference between equality of access and equality of outcome. With equality of access is about providing the same opportunities to everyone, opportunities to achieve your professional goals, opportunities to rise into leadership positions and make an impact. Equality of outcome is about making sure, you know, it's exactly 50-50 in every single area. I would say that we stand on the equality of access. We want both men and women to be able to achieve their dreams and their goals. And if there are unique situations that women face, then we would want to address those. But we're not kind of saying that, oh, you know, in every single senior leadership team position, there must be like equal, you know, male and female. That's not what we're saying.
But that the opportunity has to be there, right?
Yes.
We're talking today about gender equality, gender equity and diversity and inclusivity, all these words. But basically, we're talking about getting inclusivity in the workplace, particularly when it comes to this idea of women either returning to the workforce or being in positions of senior management or decision making. I want to know whether you, A, have questions about this at all, but also, what's your workplace like? Do you identify with it as being a space which is equal? Call us and let us know, 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 6:47. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, as well as two representatives from Lean in Malaysia, Deborah Nita Ravindran and Asma Shahira, as well as the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia, Andrew Golitzinovsky. So we've been talking today about equity in the workplace and the importance of having men be part of the conversation. Now, I just wanted to run through some commonly held thoughts surrounding women in the workplace, because we're talking about A, equity, but B, also decision making. And decision making usually involves people in more senior positions. And I've heard it said that some people prefer male bosses, female bosses being perceived as emotional or irrational, among other things. I just wanted you guys to kind of respond to that.
All right. So this is, I think a lot of people have been asking a lot of this question, and I can say this is a very good question. The first thing first, I think we should address that having emotion is not a weakness. And it's not if we show any emotion in anywhere, it doesn't show that you are a weak person. That's one thing. And then I think this relates to the having the unconscious bias thought. The fact that having a female bosses that they will perceive as emotional and irrational. And then when it comes to all this, the thing is how to overcome. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with having emotion. It doesn't define that you're weak. And of course, when it comes to all this, the first thing we can do is that we cannot generalize. Just because maybe you encounter one of the bad female bosses, and then the next time you're going to have a female boss, you're going to generalize her, going to be like, oh, this is going to be the same female bosses that I have, former boss before this. That's one thing. And then another one more thing is like, and people have to know how the reaction, for example, let's say you have you make mistake in the workplace and all, and then your female boss tend to say something about it, and maybe some people will take it different way, like because of female boss. But then when it comes to male boss, when the male boss tries to correct a mistake, so people can just accept that. So that is the thing we should address, that people should be aware that there's no such thing as female boss and male boss. We shouldn't address them as a gender and all. It depends on the individual basis. That's one thing. And then second thing, the thoughts that we have to address as well is the attitude. Because at the end of the day, how are we going to tackle all this issue is because how receptive you are, and how can you take the constructive feedback from the bosses. It's not because of gender, it's not because of female boss or male boss. It depends on how are you going to take it, suppose that. Yeah.
Another point, and one that's just been raised by a listener, Munif Malik, in fact, is that hiring mothers or women who could become mothers inconvenience other members of the team or add to the workload because of things like maternity leave. There's also a sense that mums at work or wanting to resume work get special treatment. How would you respond to that?
I think I kind of addressed it a little bit in the previous answer, but maybe I'll just recap. So I found through speaking with other mothers and working with other mothers, when you have multiple jobs as opposed to one job, so one job being raising your children, you find a way to multitask and make everything extremely organized so that you can achieve on all of them. And that's kind of the experience that's been shared to me by mothers. So if it's not, you know, working into the wee hours of the night, which a lot of mums do, I think they just learn how to multitask better, and they start negotiating with their bosses to have, you know, flexible work arrangements for themselves. So I found that those strategies have been strategies that women who are mothers have used.
And you know, considering there are these mindsets in place, right? I mean, we're trying to change them, and slowly over time, I think, Andrew, you raised the point earlier, that cultural change, it happens, but it can be slow. So right now then, are we seeing an openness to actually making adjustments within the workforce?
I would say from the experience of, Lean In Malaysia working with companies, we've seen such an overwhelming support from various kinds of corporations, whether that's, you know, banks, telcos. They are increasingly interested in what we're doing because what they realize is it's not just a very nice idea to get on with, but it's also a great loyalty and talent retention strategy. So when you kind of invest in half of your workforce, you see that they recognize what you're doing for them and they stay on with you because they respect you as an employer. And that's definitely the case with mothers who are taken back from career breaks because it's like, okay, so this employer versus other employers
is so much
took a chance on me. And so therefore I'm willing to then, you know, put my time and my effort and my investment back into this company. I think it's a great loyalty strategy.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about is that the idea of the male champion actually also encompasses the importance of having a senior male mentor. And I think a lot about mentorship. I think that it's an important component of a successful workplace. But I'd like to hear from you guys. I mean, why do you think it's important? And what kind of components of mentorship are particularly important in terms of career development?
I guess just looking at the statistics, when we see who are the senior leaders, they tend, well, most of them in Malaysia at least, 70% of senior leaders are males. And when we think about mentorship as a concept, it's quite clear from research that people with mentors are more likely to be promoted, get better compensation, get better opportunities. So if most of the leaders are male and mentorship is important, then if, you know, males don't mentor women, then they are missing out on a lot of opportunities of career advancement. I think that's just a very kind of logical rationale for having more senior male mentors.
On the other hand, mentorship requires an investment, right? Because that's one of the reasons why it's a little more labor intensive, I think, than other forms of training. Is there a willingness to do this? Because I can see what's in it for the mentee, but what's in it for the mentor?
You know, it's been quite a pleasure seeing the mentors on our program because they've thoroughly enjoyed the process themselves. They tend to, of course, mentor women who are younger than them. So it's kind of giving them an insight into the next generation of leaders outside of the context of their workplace. And for them, seeing the transformation of these individuals is really rewarding. I mean, just seeing them on the finale day where they saw their mentees go on stage and pitch, you could see them kind of like beaming with satisfaction all those hours that they put in, which is actually, you know, just about an hour a week. It could create such transformation. And I think that's really rewarding. And I guess when you're known as a mentor as well, I mean, thinking about it rationally, it elevates your status, right? Okay, you're a mentor. So like that means that you are contributing. It means that you are a respected person. It means that you are very experienced and you know things. So I think it's also great for a mentor to kind of have that perception of themselves.
All of that and one more thing too. If you're in a good organization that you're committed to and loyal to, part of the satisfaction is seeing that organization grow and being part of that growth and cultural change. Mm-hmm. And the way you achieve that is through mentorship.
So we've been having these conversations now for quite some time, you know, and seeing change happen, sometimes quicker than others, but the point is that there is change. We have just about 3 minutes left in this. I'd just like to know, how would you like to see these conversations develop? You know, in your opinions, what is the next step? What is the next thing that we need to be talking about?
All right. So I think the first thing we should talk about is the breakthrough. That's where we bring in, that is one of the theme that we are going to bring in for the Lean In conference, the breakthrough of diversity. So we've been talking about the problem. We were talking about the problem statement, how are we going to achieve things. The thing is right now, we should talk about the impact. What is the finding? What is the research about all this? What we have done? So that is the most important thing. I should say the breakthrough, hence the reason why. For those, everyone out there, for BFM listeners, you should come for next week, Leaning on Conference 2019. On 30th November, we're starting at 10, and then after we're going to finish by 2. So you should listen to all this. How are you going to experiencing the breakthrough until the end, from the breakdown to breakthrough to how to be a male champion? Right.
I guess just to add a little bit, it's maybe if listeners would take a chance on what we're talking about, just expose yourself just for half a day and see that maybe there are these topics that are relevant and interesting and beneficial for you.
Andrew, on your part, and I think that in some ways, Australia has been having, like you said, it's actually a part of public discourse, I think, in a way that perhaps is more prevalent than it is here. Where do you see this going? I mean, what do you think is the next logical step to go into? In terms of developing this idea of equity and equality?
For Australia? Well, I think we're on a track. I think it's showing results and dividends, at least in the organisation that I work in, and I think in other organisations. I think we're going to continue benchmarking ourselves against the best. If you look at the best companies in the world, the most successful companies, they are way ahead of the middle pack. And I guess Australia is somewhere near the front of the middle. I don't think we're yet world's best practice in many areas. And there are areas where Malaysia is ahead of Australia. For example, in parliamentary numbers, Australia has more women parliamentarians than Malaysia does.
That's good.
But on the bench, your judiciary, we both have female chief justices, but you have more women on the bench at the superior court level than Australia does. So when we have judicial exchanges, as we do, that's an area where Australia can learn from Malaysia.
Excellent. And on that note, just to reiterate what Shahira was saying earlier, the Lean In An Conference is actually going to be happening on the 30th of November 2019 at Sasana Kijang from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., so just half a day. If you want more details, you can get that from leaninmalaysia.com/LIU-2019. You can also look up Lean In Malaysia on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. The details will all be there. Everybody, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much.
I've been speaking today with two representatives from Lean In Malaysia, Deborah Nita Ravindran and Asma Shahira, as well as Andrew Golodzinovsky, who is the Australian High Commissioner to Malaysia. You've been listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.